everybody, and welcome back to your favorite G.I. Joe podcast show, live from quarantine. It's Knowing is Half the Podcast, and I am Race Decanus.
Robert Gleck Chan.
I'm Gina Bellito.
Are you? Are you sure? You had to think about that one.
What? I answered on the heels of Chan.
The Zencaster window says daytime butt, so I don't I don't know if you know who you are, Gina.
Look, we're recording.
Can
during
I tell
the
you,
daytime.
Gina? This is the Gina. I'm going to tell you right now that me and Chan were the first two people in the Zencaster room, and we actually had a bet between us of what your name was going to be. I predicted it would be something poop related, and Chan decided you were seasonal, and it was going to be something pumpkin related. And we were both losers today, as your name is Daytime Butt.
You were pretty close, Ray.
I cycled through a couple because we're doing the fall crawl Zoom pub crawl today. And I'm surrounded by pumpkin-y stuff and candles and beer for tonight to really set the mood. So for a second, I thought about it. But I already blew my wad when I did Pumpkin Butt a couple weeks ago. And then I thought, should I do some sort of homage to RBG's butt? But I was worried it would really turn you guys off. So since we're recording during the daytime, I went with the safe choice of Daytime Butt.
Real quick, what would you have gone with if you were coming up with a name that references Ruth Bader Ginsburg's hindquarters?
I mean, just off the top of my head, it would have been R Butt G or Ruth Butt Ginsburg.
Okay. Okay, I see that.
But I didn't really think about it too much, Ruth, because I quickly dismissed it because I'm a sensitive individual to the way you guys think.
I'm assuming, Ray, that if and when you do have another daughter, you are going to name her Ruth Butt Ginsburg.
I was actually going to take out the Ruth and the Ginsburg because Ruth is already part of my current child's name.
Okay, sure.
And so I was just going to go with Butt Stacanus.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. There's no way that she would be ridiculed for that name.
Thank you. Yeah, I can't think of anything terrible that rhymes with butt, so let's just put it out there.
To be fair, anything with Stacanus on the end is
superior, I know. So the episode we're talking about this week is The Greatest Evil Part 1. This is G.I. Joe Deke era. We're getting pretty close to the end of G.I. Joe Deke era.
Really? This is it? There's no more?
We don't have that many more episodes to go. No, there's a few more, but we're nearing the end of
Deke era. No, I mean, after this, what do we do? What do we do with our lives?
Anything but this.
We need more G.I. Joe.
There's Resolute. There's the really dark-toned, not funny ones where they like nuke Moscow and everybody's sad. We have that G.I. Joe to look forward to and the live-action movies to talk about as well. So get ready for that. But for right now, we have written by Doug Booth. Not Doug Booth. I'm sorry. Bob Forward. Doug Booth is rad. Doug Booth is the head writer of G.I. Joe Deke era. But Bob Forward, my nemesis, my writer nemesis, who writes all the anti-drug episodes, also wrote this particular two-part anti-drug episode.
So this is...
He writes all the anti-drug episodes?
He wrote the He-Man, She-Ra Christmas special, I believe.
That had nothing to do with drugs. That was holiday-themed.
I think he might have also written Cartoon All-Stars to the Rescue.
Ray, do you think holidays and drugs are the same thing?
Don't you?
I mean, based on how you act, Gina.
No, I like holidays. I like holidays way better than I like drugs. Drugs are okay. I can take them or leave them. If someone was like, never do drugs again, I'd be like, all right.
No, what I'm saying is holidays to you are like drugs. You get strung out basically from October through December.
Oh, hell yeah. This year I started even earlier.
Yeah. You're already going.
Yeah. Some people have tried to stop me, but it's you know, there's no rules, man. We're stuck inside. If I want to decorate my house, if I want to paint it orange and put pumpkins all around, I'm allowed to do it in September.
Who's trying to stop you? Is there like a neighborhood program that's like outside your home right now with pitchforks and tiki torches?
No. You know, when I've been posting all of my Pumpkin Trader Joe's goods and you know, all of the many Yankee candles and other candles that I get that have names like Pumpkin Sunrise, every once in a while someone will comment, Jesus, calm down, Gina. But I assume that they have no joy in life. So
Thank you. Their only joy is going on Facebook and telling you to tone it down.
Exactly. Exactly.
To be fair, it's pretty fun.
So this was interesting because this was a, like, I could picture how this conversation was going in the writer's room, which is someone said, oh, we should do an anti-drug episode. Everyone's doing them. We really want to do it. It's the cool thing. There's the DARE program and all that crap.
Oh, yeah.
And then someone said, oh, okay, so Cobra gets into dealing drugs. And someone else said, oh, no. We can't have any regular characters dealing drugs.
Right.
And then someone else was like, I mean, Cobra tried to kill all the world scientists, tried to blow up the moon. And someone said, yeah, those are not as bad as selling drugs to the moms of America right now. So we can't have any character that will reappear in future episodes have anything to say about drugs other than these drugs are bad, or, oh my God, I can't believe I got caught up in drugs. So they had to basically bring in an outside villain and partner up G.I. Joe and Cobra, even though they have a built-in villain to the show, because drugs are too irredeemable even for Cobra.
Also, though, they brought in I don't remember, Cesspool, is it?
Well, since, like, I'm the previous environmental episode, this is the headman in this episode.
No, I get that. Oh, but they brought him in to be like, I hate the environment. And also, look at that, a whole new line of toys. I'm curious if that was a thing where they're like, yeah, just bring in new characters for Cobra to also be mad or team up with.
No, you know? I mean, for those other ones, I would say yes. For a drug thing, it's this was at the height of, you know, like moms going crazy and forcing kindergartners to sit in on DARE programs. And this is not, like, if they tried to sell a toy of, like, and this guy's a drug dealer, parents would have rioted. Like, suburban white women would have rioted.
I would have gone. I would go this Halloween as the headman if anybody but us knew what the headman is. Us and anybody who's listening to this particular episode of Noise Out the Podcast.
Look, Jam,
considering the fact that your Halloween is probably just going to be spent, like, with us at home, you may as well go for it.
Fair point.
You have a long history of promising G.I. Joe themed costumes and then not delivering. So don't get anyone's hopes
You've
up.
You've never done one.
I don't have a problem getting people's hopes up and dashing them senselessly to the ground. It's why I teamed up with Cobra in season two of Deke.
That's true.
I was the disappointer.
Real quick, before we dive too deep in this episode, we had some reviews I wanted to read. We have three new reviews of the last, like, 2 months. We need more, guys. If you haven't given us a 5-star review yet, we really want to get Chan. Chan has said before, if we can get to 85 reviews by Halloween, which is like a month and a half away, he will shave his head and go as Dr. Mindbender.
Yeah, this is for the past three years.
So we need to get some more 5-star reviews.
I mean, you know, let me see those numbers and we'll talk.
So the first one we got is from Erica Curry saying, super fun, 5 stars, nostalgia overload, super fun podcast with hilarious hosts. So I'm hoping she's talking about this show and not some other show. Very possible she clicked on the wrong show.
yeah, it happens.
We have one, DinoCat768, what a find, 5 stars. I love this podcast. The chemistry between the three hosts is great. All three are funny in their own way. Well, that's kind of feels backhanded in its a little way. I've recommended to a few others who love it too. I would recommend subscribing to the Patreon account to access the vault. Hey, that's a great idea, DinoCat768.
That sounds like, did you just make up a fake account so that you could fit a Patreon plug in there?
Okay, so the third one is Mr. Retro Ghost. Converted me, 5 stars. I would listen periodically on every episode dealing with Storm Shadow, but when they finally expanded into reviewing other cartoons, that's when the show became a real treat. Great show.
Boom.
Wow, that's another backhanded boom, boom, boom. Great show, great and funny host, worth a subscription. You won't regret it at all. I just want to get those. Thank you very much for all you guys who've left us 5-star reviews. One person in the world gave us a 1-star review, and I'm still angry about it. And that person is a host of this show.
Yes.
will never. There will come a time. There will come a time when all of humanity needs to leave Earth and go to the next inhabitable planet, and they're putting people in charge based on their podcast reviews. And someone will come up to us and say, oh, great, great podcast. You're each funny in your own way. Here's a pod of people to take to, you know, this random moon that we just found. And you're going to get to be in charge of them and you know, all of this good stuff. Oh, crap. We scrolled down and there's a 1-star review. You know what? We're going to shoot you into the sun instead.
Gina's dream apparently is to be in charge of a pod of people on the way to a nameless moon somewhere out in space. I'm honestly a little more concerned about that than the whole rest of the construction there.
No, it's great. When you consider how much time she spent in Zoom writers' rooms, all of this holds up.
I get that. Yeah, I wish we were in space
and I could airlock people. That's what Gina thinks.
Yeah, plus a whole new planet to decorate with pumpkin stuff.
You couldn't get to the planet. I'm sorry. We have every manner of produce except gourds.
No.
Oh, no. It's the Burgess Meredith Twilight Zone episode all over again. Finally, all the time in the world to put out these gourds. There are no more gourds in the world.
Honestly, life has just become one extended Burgess Meredith episode of Twilight Zone.
You're not wrong. Hey, speaking of getting onto it, let's talk about the episode. Greatest Evil
No,
Part
we weren't
one.
Speaking about getting onto that at all. We were completely spiraling out of control into weird sci-fi tangents.
So, cold open. This is a strange cold open because we get started with a whole bunch of drugs, a whole bunch of cash. We learn that there's a new drug called Spark. And there's a guy named the Headman who's in charge of this drug empire, which near as I could tell is operated out of like one slum building.
Or they locked down one alleyway. But this is a real weird opening. I checked several times to make sure that I had started it at the right spot and this was the correct link, because it just had a real weird. Like, they throw you into this thing and you have no idea what's going on. You see no G.I. Joe people, no Cobra people. So I was like confused for a few seconds.
Are you kidding me? Everything is awkward and stilted. The animation is terrible. The background voices are all like,
get him.
Which is so terrible that it can only be Deke era G.I. Joe.
No, here's the thing. It could have been a show that Deke was trying to spin off, like The Wire for kids.
Or The Headman Rules.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, what if somebody did a gritty take on The Headman for a spinoff, like a Netflix original series? Kind of like what they did with Cobra Kai?
Here's the thing. I'm pretty sure that in the second part of this episode, he's going to unzip his skin and just be a head, because otherwise, what's the point of that name?
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
I believe it is a reference to the old 60s term, like a head shop.
What's a head shop? Okay. Is that like it's like a psychiatrist?
Are you messing with me? I can't tell, because
is like a barbershop?
You're definitely old enough to know the reference, but you're also uncultured enough to not know the reference.
Well, yeah, I'll say this right now. The D.A.R.E. program, I am famously the only person the D.A.R.E. program worked on, because I never did drugs in that time.
I also never did drugs in that time.
I never did drugs in sixth grade either.
but no, I do not know what is a head shop, Chan. For all of us youngsters,
you're serious. I like
for all
that
of us
Chan
youngsters.
Said,
I've never heard this term before.
Chan basically said, "You're old, but you're also stupid."
I did, but
those
I
are my
used
two greatest
euphemisms.
Attributes, Gina.
But I agree. I couldn't tell, because as someone who didn't even drink until I was 21, I feel like I have a better purity score than you do, Ray, when it comes to this stuff. And I, of course, know what a head shop is.
So what is? Can you tell the listeners at home?
It's a store that like sold drug paraphernalia and whatnot, but it was legal. So, you know, they're like glass pipes. You could use them for tobacco, I guess.
Yeah, they still have them.
You're talking about every store in Hermosa Beach.
Yeah, exactly. Before weed was legalized out here, any place where potheads would go to get their newest glass bubble bong was a head shop.
Also, I feel like they did stuff like sold posters and occasionally pornography.
I mean,
and basically, they basically became Hot Topics.
Oh, Jesus. You're not wrong. No part of this is wrong.
Spencer's Gifts?
Spencer's Gifts, I was about to say as well, yeah.
So I just looked it up. Why do they call it a head shop? While the word head shop may have found its way back into popular vocabulary, the origin of the term, some people claim, is an acronym for He Eats Acid Daily. others think it relates to a nickname for fans of the Grateful Dead, Deadheads.
Yeah, that the latter sounds a lot more likely.
Yeah, but the first is way more fun.
Couldn't tell you. So this cold opening, He Eats Ass Daily.
Acid.
Oh, acid. Right. Oh, acid. That's not as good.
That D.A.R.E. program. I think they were really hoping that kids would make something out of themselves if they didn't do drugs.
Yeah.
I instead decided to go get a lot of head injuries.
I think that you bragging that it worked on you just means you're easily brainwashed. Like, basically, you're ready for a cult.
Oh, I knew that was true. Please. Boy, I wished one would come calling. I don't have time for that.
It's called football,
okay,
right?
So, it's so wonderful. Hey, football's back, everybody. Sundays.
Football is our leader. Football gets to have sex with whatever women football wants.
I mean,
football has the right of prima nocte. Noctis? That's weird.
That's what all cult leaders do. All cult leaders get to bang whoever they want.
I'm just saying it's difficult to build a system of government on that.
I don't know. It would work on all.
So this cold open. As we heard, a bunch of angry white people tried to chase the drug dealers off this slum block, and they ended up having defensive cannons set up like in the building where the head man was set up, and then they shoot away all of the people and say, "We own this block. Get away from here. We're going to sell our drugs." My first thought is, this seems like it would be very easy for G.I. Joe to defeat.
Yeah, I mean, or the local cops.
Why is he shooting missiles at randos on the street?
I couldn't tell what it was. At first, they looked like gas canisters.
Like, he's got lasers. Start with the lasers, and you don't have to bust out any kind of explosives until you actually have a military threat, for crying out loud.
Well, and also, you still have to live in that neighborhood. You don't be bombing out your neighbors, then you'll get some complaints.
Look, have you watched The Wire, Ray?
Fair point.
I've seen the first season of The Wire, yeah.
What?
No missiles were shot.
What?
Day-to-day operations. Maybe they get there in season 4 or 5, but from my seasons, I saw.
Oh, you're the worst.
And then they tried to take it to the pier, and I didn't care anymore.
You're the worst.
So then we have our theme song. You know this already. This is not news.
You're the worst. You didn't even watch the school season. The school season's the most compelling one.
Wait, what? Which season is that?
It's like season 4, I think. Where
season 4 is the most compelling season of The Wire?
I mean, when you rewatch it and you already know everything that's going to happen, it's the season that shows you where all these people come from, and you are able to identify which kids are going to basically take over which people, and which kids make it out and which kids don't.
Yeah, I checked out long before that. Yeah.
Also, a couple of major things happened in that season that I won't spoil for anyone.
Well, that's good of you for this, at this point, 20-year-old show. Sure.
She's still hoping that she'll watch it, Ray.
Maybe I'll go back to it someday. There's just too many good things to watch. You know, I got Cobra Kai to watch.
That's one of them. It was Obama's favorite show. How can you not watch it?
Well,
it's a great question. So moving forward, yeah, I can tell you guys really want to talk about this episode. Okay, so Falcon is on drugs. Okay, Falcon, who we've seen maybe once since G.I. Joe the movie, famously played by Don Johnson. He's Duke's younger half-brother. And of course, if you're going to pick a member of the Joe team to be on drugs, you pick the screw-up, you pick Falcon. In my mind, awesome place for shipwreck, but here we are.
But here's the thing.
I would have said if you need someone to be on drugs, you pick the black guy. Fortunately, they didn't. They did.
Look, we all know that the one most likely to become a drug addict is Lowlight because of past trauma.
You know, the thing about it, though, is that Lowlight keeps his drug condition under control and nobody cares about him enough in order to actually like try to help him.
But he uses like, his addiction for good.
He's
I guess.
The classic, you know, single tear running down his face as he's shooting up heroin and, you know, that scene. But
what classic is that? Are you mixing it up with the commercial about littering with the Native American?
I remember he throws a soda can on the ground and then the Native American chief shoots up heroin and starts crying. I remember that scene very intimately.
There's that movie with the chick that I think is the chick from Swim Fan and she's shooting up drugs.
Requiem for a Dream?
No.
I know. Requiem for a Dream.
That just celebrated its like 97th birthday or something like that. Something that made me
Requiem for a Dream. A lot of people don't know this. It was made in 1927. How does math work?
Sergei Eisenstein's first movie.
No, it's the chick from someone's going to weigh in on this that knows what I'm talking about. It's the chick. Erica Christensen. Oh,
Erica Badu.
No, Ray.
Erica Curry, who left us a 5-star review.
And thank you for that, Erica Curry.
Traffic. It was in Traffic. The movie Traffic. She's like doing heroin and as she's like smoking heroin or crack. Uh-huh. I don't remember what it was, but she has like a tear in the corner of her eye that rolls down at the exact right moment that I was always curious if it was added in later or she really did it.
I don't get to say this as often in the podcast as I would like to, but sorry, that's some white people shit.
What, the movie Traffic?
Yeah.
I've only ever seen it like once because someone said it was good. And I think it was Skander. So you're racist. But can I just say that I don't care who they make on drugs, but I do care who they give a beret to. Because if I see a beret in this whack ass, weird animated Deke era G.I. Joe, I think it's Flint.
Right.
And when it turns out not to be Flint, I'm confused.
Falcon's the other beret, and he actually, in the movie especially, wore very similar colors to Flint. So it was a little confusing to young Ray. What I would appreciate this is that Falcon gets tapped on the shoulder by Mutt, who you'd think if there was a guy on drugs, actually, Mutt would probably be so depressive.
No, people who love animals have a purpose in life that they don't want to die doing drugs.
Do you not remember the Christmas episode of G.I. Joe where Mutt tries to ruin Christmas for everyone? Yeah, that'll change your opinion,
Gina.
No,
I don't, actually.
Yeah.
I just get real sad.
My parents weren't around so much, and I just get sad around Christmas time.
Wasn't there a holiday episode where they all got shrunk?
Oh, that was a different episode. Anyway.
You may be thinking of Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. Was Rick Moranis in it? That's what I'll ask you.
I don't remember, but I do know one of the kids, when they're smoking heroin, has a single tear roll down their face just before the giant ant bursts out of the brush.
And then the giant ant starts shooting up heroin and has a single ant tear. And it's a nice moment in that movie. I remember it.
Wait, can I just say that I appreciate that this drug makes, because they never specify what the hell this drug is.
Oh, no, it's called Spark.
Yeah, no, they do. But I'm trying to figure out like what, it seems like it's written meth. By people who've never done drugs. Yeah.
It is 100% meth.
It's crystal meth. That's
okay,
what I got out
okay.
of it the whole time.
Because he spent an hour ironing his wardrobe, his uniform. And I was like, all right, I appreciate that. I appreciate a crisp uniform on a drugged up man.
He did. Yeah. He spent an hour ironing his uniform right after he cut the lawn with a pair of safety scissors. Like, you know, it's fantastic. Something about a diamond jet. I don't know. I just wrote diamond jet. What the? Okay. So then we cut over to Crimson Guardsman number one, because I am going to progress this episode forward. God damn it. And
we're
he gets a
there.
Message while they're about to. Oh, they're about to steal some diamonds are on a jet. That's what's going on. So he's about to steal some diamonds and he gets a call from home. This is so weird. This is so I can't express how god darn weird this is, because Crimson Guardsman number one, not a character we know, gets a message from Cobra HR calling him to tell him that his sister, I think it was Cindy, is in the hospital from a drug overdose.
Yep.
And he gets this while going into a mission. For Cobra, like what?
Totally normal.
Like, what?
Definitely a thing that Cobra, happens in the show all the time.
All the time. Like, wouldn't you just wait till the mission's over and then tell him? You don't even know if he's going to survive the mission. So maybe he doesn't need to be worried about that while trying to do this military job for you. I don't know. This whole thing is just bizarre.
Okay, hold on now. Hold okay, on so now. We know that Cobra is... just bad, routinely bad at what they do in these Deke years. It is entirely possible, given that this is the 90s and we're talking, you know, we're still coming off the Reagan years, that Cobra is in fact just a tax haven, and they put money in to launder it, so, you know, which means that everything they have to do basically has to be a failure. They have to put in lots of money and not get any of it back. You know, it's almost like a producer's situation. So it's possible that every time the Cobras go into battle, everybody gets their own personalized, like, hey, just so you know, your wife is she called and said something about she was leaving and taking the, I don't know, I can't quite read this note here, but maybe your kids possibly. Anyway, just so you know, as you're going into battle, have a good luck. Every single one of them gets some weird ass message, so that they're all doing anything but thinking of the mission. They're thinking about their lives. They're thinking about the, oh no, my stocks have gone tits up. And all I'm saying is that this is this may be 100% normal.
Okay, I'll go with that. So they end up fighting over these diamonds.
I was
Falcon's there, and he
sure that nobody was left on this recording. Both of you, your internet had gone out, or my internet had gone out.
I was just
talking to myself.
I was trying to figure out if I had missed my window to get my sound pull that I want from drug guy when he's flying into action.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely, still here.
Sounds like hot action.
The words are not great, but the way he says it, I mean, that's actually some good voice acting. It made me uncomfortable.
He definitely was thinking about having anal sex with one or more people.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It's like some hot action. And it's like he's in the process of jerking off is what it sounds like while he's doing that, because he's a little strangled and a little choked.
Mm-hmm. Also, I
gotta get into character for this 90s cartoon. What? Come on. Who cares what I do in the booth while I perform?
Here is where I had the note bag ? Which says to me that this was the first time we saw where the drugs came from, which is a bag like an early 80s video game, like a Zelda game. It's just like a weird little globular pouch.
Yes.
That should have had the little money sign on it, but I guess because it's drugs, it would be something different. But very iconographic, very cartoony.
Yeah, I was 100% thinking like a D&D satchel full of magic dust.
Yep.
Well, it's magic dust. Yeah.
Which, like, later on we see there is some sort of, like, purple dust in it.
Yeah, that's what drugs are.
That's what all drugs are.
Purple dust.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is what's great about it is, like, Falcon jumps on the chopper as they're trying to get away with the diamonds. He shoots the chopper while it's flying away with him. They crash. They get into a car chase with baggage cars at the airport, which is kind of amazing.
They Falcon go crashing through. There are no parachutes. They just go crashing through a wall, through a fucking stone wall, into suitcases, and then keep on going. They get on those little baggage trains. The baggage trains that go about 4 miles an hour, which he one of them wheelies because it's the 90s.
Yeah,
it wheelies, and then a few minutes later, he tries to jump it to catch a helicopter.
To jump
a cargo train, and he's like, "What? I don't understand what went wrong here. I'm going 4 miles an hour, and yet I can't leap this thing in the air like a goddamn General Lee."
Well, that's what kills me about this, is because they get away and everyone blames Falcon. And I'm just like, he's the only person that was nearby. And what were the rest of you doing this entire time? He was on a 4 mile an hour baggage car chase and none of you could catch up to it. Like, I think Falcon deserves a medal for his performance here. I think every other G.I. Joe involved in this mission should be reprimanded. I don't know. That really rubbed me the wrong way.
You're on the side of the meth addict. Help?
Yes, I'm going to say right now, I am on Falcon's side here, 100%.
Sounds like that DARE program didn't take after all, eh, Ray?
I mean, look, after 30 years, it started to wane a little.
Look, before the podcast, we were talking about Ray's love of Insane Clown Posse, so I feel like this is very much in keeping with his Detroit heritage.
In what way?
I don't want to be racist, but... white people in Detroit be like,
was that the noise? That was the noise of them starting up their cars.
Oh,
yeah, I'm not sure what that was.
That just set off the Google Home. I don't know what words in that sentence set off the Google Home, but it said I did not understand.
I don't want to be racist, and then it just goes, go on. Let me record this for posterity.
Yeah, it started recording it and sent it to all your future potential employers.
You owe Google a nice chunk of change now. We call it a subscription, but you know what it is. Okay, so yeah, everybody blames Doug. So Duke, we cut to the office where G.I. Joe HR, which apparently Duke is in charge of, and he calls out Falcon right there, and he's just like, hey, you jerk, you know, you're kicked out of G.I. Joe. If you know, or you're in trouble with G.I. Joe, I should say, you need to get your poop together. At which point we introduced to a brand new character, an African-American fellow named Bulletproof. And, you know, Chen's alluded to where we're going with this already, but, Falcon's having a bad day basically. And he says, I just need to go get a boost. And we know what that means. Cut to the hospital where Crimson Guardsman number one meets Cindy, who's OD'd and is in the hospital. And
not she immediately her. He gets a phone saying your sister's in the hospital.
Yeah, we talked about that already. Now we cut to him going to the hospital at the end of the mission because he says everybody else is going back to Cobra Base. He goes, I got to stop by the hospital. And it's like, sure, why not? And so she ends up snitching out the headman right there. And I'm just like, come on, Cindy, what are you doing? Don't you want another sweet, sweet fix?
It doesn't come back to bite her, though. Like, normally, if this was any other show, the second she said, oh, it was the headman, then you see that one of the orderlies is actually a bag boy for the headman, goes back and says, she spilled it.
And Gina, she got kidnapped this episode.
Yeah, but not because of that.
How do you know?
Because there's no one, like, I wanted her to get killed because she ratted out the headman, but she just gets kidnapped when they realize, oh shit, she's related to a Cobra person.
Back it up here, because you want Cindy, the young girl who is addicted to drugs, to get killed for snitching. Ray is supporting the meth addict who's about to get kicked out of G.I. Joe. Am I the moral center of this podcast now? How did that happen?
Look, it's crazy times. Happen. It's crazy times in this world, Chan. We should have all seen this coming.
Dogs and cats living together. Yeah, I get it.
These are unprecedented times we live in, and it's time for an unprecedented moral center to this show. okay, so she's
a world of hurt.
So this is maybe my favorite scene of the whole episode. which is Falcon drops his drugs because they open the door. For some reason, Falcon's decided to do his drugs right next to the door, which is a little weird.
Like you do.
Yeah, and so they open up the door to Falcon's room to kind of check in on him. Duke does, and he slams into him and knocks his drugs on the floor, spilling the purple powder everywhere. Immediately says, "You do drugs? You're fired from G.I. Joe." And Falcon decides to tell his story. And his story is basically, "I wanted to be good at Joeing, so I did crystal meth, and then
worst
I did a whole lot of workouts.
Ever.
And now I'm just tired all the time." And then, Chan, can you tell us, talk to us about how Bulletproof handles this?
Let me tell you about my story.
To be fair, he could have been lying to manipulate
other guy. Why?
There was no chance he was lying. No.
I'm just saying, like, maybe he didn't ever do drugs, but he could have just been lying.
Because he's black?
No, because he's like trying to say, like, "I know where you came from, man. I get what you're going through. I was once there too," so that he can, you know, relate to him and stuff. Like when people lie in job interviews and say, my greatest strength is that I'm too organized.
Or like when Scarlett gets her legs blown off by an IED or something like that, and he comes into the hospital room and is like, I know where you've been. Like when I was 14, I had my legs blown off.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Grew them back, but you know, definitely.
I love this idea for this character.
He's just really empathetic, and people never question it.
I love this. Now, Gina, next time you write a show, maybe for some upcoming project, you need to have a character whose entire gimmick is that they claim when they were 14 years old, they've gone through whatever insane thing the other people on the show are currently going through, and no one questions them on it. And
I've been rewatching Dexter, and there are characters in it that are good at this kind of thing.
See? Okay, well, this makes a little
more
sense.
But this is what's great about it, is that towards the end of like season two or three, you do one episode, which is a flashback episode to the 14th year on this planet of that character, and you show every one of those things actually happening to them, all in the span of 365 days. This is gold. This is gold right here. Write it down. I don't know anything about writing. Okay, so my point is, we go back to Crimson Guardsman number one, and Crimson Guardsman number one and Duke are both flying from their respective places, and they're both kind of amped up and angry. Understandably so. So they decide, each one is like, "Oh, you picked the wrong day, enemy of mine." So they start fighting and shooting at each other.
Run into each other. They're in planes flying over, I don't know how wide a space. One is at G.I. Joe headquarters. Another one's at the hospital. I don't know. I assume that Crimson Guardsman number one is headed back to Cobra base, and Duke is headed back to home, maybe to visit his parents. Somehow, however far apart they are geographically, they fly together. And not just together, they're like, "Oh, fuck you. No, fuck you, man." And they play chicken and both crash their planes into each other.
And then it takes them 35 minutes to descend.
Yes. Well, and then they end up getting stuck on one parachute.
They dock like you do. Like, that is clearly a metaphor for them pulling their penises out and one of them stick jamming in the other one's uncircumcised foreskin.
Their shoots intertwine with each other in a very sexual way. And then they're left being like, "You pull out." "No, you pull out."
Yep. Just like you do.
Yep. No, this holds up. So they decide to declare a truce as they're dropping for 35 minutes, and they have a conversation about like, "Hey, I'm just really amped up because my, you know, sister's on drugs." "Oh, really? My brother, half brother's on drugs. Hey, and let's talk about that some more."
Yeah. They're like, "Oh, let me sit down. We've got all the time in the world. Tell me your tale as we descend to the ground over these next several days." And then it cuts back to them and it's like, "Wow, that was quite a story." And then they write The Hobbit, and then they have a 14-course meal together, and then finally they hit the ground.
Yeah, it's pretty. And then they decide, well, let's team up and go get the headman. And this is where I feel like this episode is so incredibly dumb, because we've seen G.I. Joe take out Cobra Temple after Cobra Temple. Oh. We've seen them defeat all of Cobra La. They invaded the Himalayas and took out an alien or entity. And yet one dude with a couple cannons on a block in Brooklyn is shutting down all of G.I. Joe. Like, no, I don't understand like how this guy is this big a threat.
They need to be worried about civilian casualties. Plus, you know, some of the cops in this town are in on it. They're not just talking about taking out one guy. They're talking about overhauling the system, which is why you should have watched all of The Wire, Ray.
This makes
guys,
sense.
I'm going to go back. I'm going to watch all The Wire and I'm going to come right back. Okay, so we're going to make an edit right here.
G.I. Joe will return after these messages.
Hey, this is Keith, or some actor playing Keith. I'm not really sure anymore, but we're coming to the end of my Los Angeles con spree. But before I leave, I have some scores to settle and discover a couple truths to be revealed. It's all going to come down to the season finale of Rideshare Episode X. It's going to drop on December 3rd. Now, until then, I want you to catch up by binge listening the first season. And I suggest that you do exactly as I say. Or you're going to miss all the fun.
Hey, it's Brent Pope, the host of Breakfast with Brent Pope. You've seen me on some of your favorite TV shows saying things like, give it up, Jimmy, you got to sink this putt to win. On Breakfast with Brent Pope, I sit down with guests from the entertainment world and we do it all over breakfast. Or should I say Breakfast? Every week on Breakfast, you get inside Hollywood info and tips, great breakfast recs and booty debates. Most of all, you get the most delightful 30 minutes of your week. So dig in. It's breakfast time. Listen at breakfast.com, Apple Podcasts, or wherever fine podcasts are found.
Courtney, 1986. Check it out. She's at the mall having fun and feeling cool. Looking fresh in a side pony playing Pac-Man cause it rules. She passes all the high scores on her way to level 9. Hey, Courtney.
Yeah?
How you feeling? Totally, like, tubular. I'm feeling super neat. Hey, Courtney.
That's me.
What you doing? Totally discovering what's so uniquely me.
Wow.
Power of adventure. No challenge bigger than her. Show fight, strength, and confidence. Level up, going forward.
G.I. Joe.
Yeah, you'll be done by the time we hit the ground.
Thank you.
No, no, no. Here's the thing. But we're almost done with G.I. Joe, which clearly means we need to turn this into a Wire podcast.
Oh, Jesus.
The exact
I probably would be able to follow it a little better than Legion. So we got that.
I wouldn't bet on it.
Yeah, I doubt it. I think you would probably be not be very confused either way.
You know, guys, I actually changed my mind. I wouldn't understand it. And I've seen it. Cobra doesn't care about civilian casualties either. I don't know. This whole thing is just bizarre. And I understand what they're trying to do, but this is a very ham-handed way of doing it. Cobra Crimson Guardsman number one goes back to Cobra Commander and says, let's ally with G.I. Joe. And he says, what if we go there and we just steal all the drug money of the headman? And Cobra Commander's like, yo, I like it. This is weird. Let's do it anyway. G.I. Joe, on the flip side, has their own meeting where Duke is just like, yo, we're going to ally with Cobra in order to take him down, to where people shouting, you must be nuts at him. And then within 5 seconds of him basically being like, come on, guys, they all go, okay, we're all on board. Let's do it.
Here's the thing. I enjoyed this, actually. I always love a good heroes teaming up with villains to take out a bigger villain. It's usually the arc in any good season two monster type show or superhero type show.
Sure.
And they do this in an episode. I wanted to see more of the weird pair ups because they had a couple of quick little bits. Like they have the Baroness with Junkyard. And finally, like we'd see Junkyard, because I was upset that we saw Mutt earlier in the episode with no Junkyard, although I do not like his redesign where they make him look like a mean dog. But yeah, like they show her and she's like, oh, I can't believe I have to work with someone straight out of the pound. I was talking about you, not the dog. And I was like, all right, I could watch an episode of each of these pair ups of what each of their missions are and just like where these weird relationships go. So I liked that. I just wanted more of it.
I'm hoping that because this is a two-episode arc and because they're known for padding out, you know, three quarters of an episode into two full episodes, that there is a whole bunch of that, just a whole bunch of the pairs doing stuff. Because why not? It's the only fun part of this.
But it also seems like they go past it pretty quickly. Like maybe I'm hoping I'm wrong, and I'm hoping episode two is a bunch of that. But to me, it almost feels like they're like, oh, look at all these weird. Okay, now we moved on. We moved on to something else.
Yeah, this kind of has shades of the Games Master episode, if you guys remember that one, where Cobra Commander, Destro, Baroness, Flint, and Lady J are all kidnapped by a third party, and they have to work together. And that's what we kind of could have had here. It's one of my favorite episodes of Sunbow. Flint Dilly, great episode. Great job, Flint. So our pairings, we got Mutt, Junkyard, and Baroness. We got Bulletproof and Metalhead together, which, since we don't really know anything about Bulletproof, other than he used to be drugged out of his mind when he was a kid. I think him and Metalhead actually makes a lot of sense now that I think about it, I guess. You've got a Shockwave, who we haven't done anything with, but he gets paired with Crimson Guardsman number one. Shockwave, one of the few, if only, G.I. Joes from the state of Michigan. That's why I know him. One of my favorites for that reason. Of course,
is he also an ICP matters. Fan?
He is also an ICP fan. That is correct. He'd have to be in this era. And then there's a really fun bit with a Metalhead and a Rocket, and he's trying to like shoot the building.
And, is that a fun bit, Ray?
I thought it was the fun
bit they do with Metalhead every episode.
Yeah,
the bit was they were shooting rockets at him, and Bulletproof had to keep yanking him out of the way, and Metalhead was getting pissed because he couldn't shoot his rockets, and he's like, yeah, because you're about to get hit with the rocket, you dimbulb. And I was like, that's kind of cute. I don't know, the idea that he's so focused on shooting he doesn't worry about himself.
So this is going to be a very specific comparison, but I'm currently rereading The Stand, and to anyone who's ever read it or watched the miniseries, the original one with Rob Lowe.
Obviously. Are you about to bring a Matt Frewer reference into this?
Did we already talk about this?
No, but I was like, why is she bringing up The Stand? I'm like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
She's going to talk about Trash Can Man?
He is the Trash Can Man. Like his internal monologue of, I just get so excited, I want to blow things up. The first time we see Trash Can Man in The Stand is when he realizes he's alone in town and can finally blow up the huge gas tanks that basically feed the whole town, and he can't help himself. The Trash Can Man is the R-rated version of a G.I. Joe character.
I wanted to shut you down. I wanted to disagree wholeheartedly because it's a stupid thing to bring in, but you're not wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. I was reading the chapter last night where he's thinking about what to do, and he's realizing there's no one around, and he keeps glancing over there nervously, and he's got all his tics, and it's the same character.
Cibola, Cibola, Cibola.
Well, that actually reminds me, because Headman, who's about to take a bunch of hostages, actually reminds me a lot of Max Headroom, the character from the classic 80s television show, also played by Matt Frewer.
Did you just Google Matt Frewer? Is that what happened? Did you just Google it?
You could have brought up Dr. Doctor. That was also a great sitcom that he was in the 80s.
Falcon actually reminds me of that one...
He is not.
Okay.
That one guy from The Watchmen in his kitchen who talks to Rorschach. That's a really good.
Also
played by Matt Frewer.
But also, like, that's the last thing I can remember him being in.
No, he's still working. He was a recurring character on That one sci-fi show, Warehouse 13, was it?
Or... Oh, okay. I didn't see that. And I just got worried that maybe he had fallen out of favor because I'm a big Matt Frewer fan.
No, I love him. I was a huge Max Headroom fan back in the day. And also, oh, dang, he was in Perry Mason.
What? No, I watched all of Perry Mason.
He was in multiple episodes. So
really?
Judge Fred Wright.
Oh, crap. That's right.
He's in Castlevania.
Guys, he was also in Fear the Walking Dead. Oh, okay, he's in a ton of stuff. He's constantly working. Oh, Timeless. I remember that.
I'm looking up the new cast to see if the new Trash Can Man holds up, stacks up. What's the Trash Can Man's real name?
They got him for the 2015 Adam Sandler vehicle Pixels to play Max Headroom again. Isn't that exciting? Anyway, that's the IMDb page of Matt Frewer. Let's talk about the episode some more because the headman took some hostages. Falcon and Cindy, he stole from Detox and Cindy's in a coma. Falcon's got a plan. That's what's going on.
Wait,
the headman wants hostages and Falcon has a plan.
This is going to be upsetting for many reasons. But in the 2020 version of The Stand, the character is rumored to be portrayed by Marilyn Manson.
Into it.
No.
Into it.
No. Also,
look, I know he's a terrible person who's abusive. But also, he'd be great in The Stand.
Here's the thing. I just watched that video for the first time about all of the stories of his abuse. So put a sour taste in my mouth for Marilyn Manson. But also,
I was unaware.
Yeah, so was I, actually. But if you Google it, what's her face? Rachel
Dretch? Evan Wood from TV's Westworld.
Evan Rachel Wood has a hell of
that's the one.
Terrible, terrible, terrible like courtroom appearance that she's.
It's not good. It's not a good look for Marilyn Manson. But if you're Marilyn Manson, isn't that sort of? I mean, this is terrible, but like. I would assume that the people who are really into Marilyn Manson, that wouldn't bother them at all. Am I crazy?
I don't know Marilyn Manson. I don't know. Watch the video.
Marilyn Manson as well.
No. I'm saying I like the music. I'm not saying that I'm happy that he's an abuser for crying out loud.
But here's the thing. The other reason that I just watched that he was an abuser, but also like Matt Frewer is a guy who could look normal, but there's something slightly off about him. Like every time he plays a character, you're like, okay, that's a guy that like, if he was a judge or something, you'd be like, okay, okay. But there's something a little bit strange about him. So that throughout The Stand, he sort of had this transformation of like, oh shit, this guy who used to be like a kid that wets the bed and starts fires is a little weird and then goes full blown crazy by the end. Marilyn Manson just looks like a guy that's trying to look like a guy that looks crazy. Whereas Matt Frewer actually looks like a guy that's a little bit off.
For the people at home, Matt Frewer's kind of got one of those looks to what Gina just said. If he's in literally anything at all, 50-50 chance he's an alien.
Yeah, he reminds me of he's a little Jim Carrey-ish, and especially in The Stand, it was almost like he was playing Fire Marshal Bill, if anyone remembers that character from In Living Color that Jim Carrey played. But he could be handsome, but there's just something a little odd about him. Whereas Marilyn Manson is one of those guys that you're like, get the fuck out of here, dude.
Matt Frewer is a very handsome man. I'll go ahead, Gina. I don't need to go halfway. I'll say it. Very good looking fellow. He deserves it. Let's get to the end of this episode because we're there.
Do we have to?
We go to the roof of this building where Cobra Commander and Duke, they get hit in their aircraft and then they end up going down. They get, captured and switched and something gets fused shut. And they get stuck somewhere. I don't know. I kind of tuned out at this point. So to be continued, it'll all get recapped. We'll figure it out at the beginning of the next episode. But that's the end of Greatest Evil Part 1.
Woo!
Great episode. But we're running a little long. So, Chan, I think this is a great opportunity for a theme song throwdown.
It's the theme song throwdown. Okay, woo. I don't entirely understand how this works, but Ray, the football person, explained that in a tournament setup, you can have play-ins.
Play-in games. The best games of all.
Where, yeah, I guess someone can gank a slot from someone else.
Correct. That happens in the NCAA tournament. Really quick, it was a, 64 teams. And they said, we have 64 teams, perfect brackets, 16 times four. And then we play it. But then they said, we want four more teams in there, but we don't want to alter the structure. So they added in four play-in games so that you can have four games before the tournament starts to then make eight teams into four. And then you slide them into the 64. Boom. Now we have a tournament of 68 teams. That's what we're doing here.
Okay, fair enough. What ended up happening, because honestly, there are way more than 32 amazing cartoon theme songs. And in fact, there was one that I put in myself personally, because it's one of my favorites of all time. And Ray was like, but why is my favorite of all time?
True.
And so I'm like, well, I guess we're going to have to do this then. So it's going to be...
So it's going to be a very stressful time for Gina.
Yeah, which of us do you like better, Gina? That's what this question is.
I mean, both songs are fantastic, though, so this is actually a very hard choice. But Chan, who gets to go first in this play-in game?
Gina, you make the call because of the recency effect. I don't want to jank anything up.
Okay, what are my options again?
You're gonna have to choose one of us.
Oh, I see. Let's go with. I'll go alphabetically, so Chan.
That's not my name.
That is, you know what, Gina? Great job.
But here's the thing, alphabetically by last name, still beat him.
This is the theme song to Steven Universe.
We are the crystal gems, we'll always save the day. And if you think we can, we'll always. Steven!
Is that
short,
the whole song?
Sweet. Yeah, wow. That's all it is.
Because mine was like 4 minutes long. We had to cut it down.
Exact opposite. They did really a follow up series called Steven Universe Future, which also has its own theme song that is just as good. And it blew my mind because, like, when I first watched it, I was like, oh, this is good, but this isn't as good as the original. And then, like, two episodes later, I'm like, this song is amazing. But it's so good. And the more you listen to it, just the better it gets.
I'm so used to these theme songs going 90 seconds on this thing. So when we have one that actually goes an appropriate like 20 seconds, it's jarring.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, this is the shortest theme song ever, I think.
That was really good, though. That was really, really good.
And you can pick up a ukulele and learn how to play it. And it's the best. Anyway, next is the theme song to Lupin the Third.
バカな柄は、あいつの唇、優しく抱きしめてくれと願う。瞳の奥に獲物を映して、寂しく問いかける愛の涙。 ここには自分の世界があるたとえるなら空を駆ける一筋の流れ星孤独な笑みを夕日にさらして背中で泣いてる男の美学
You found the good.
then it goes on for another 2.5 minutes.
I mean, okay. If you're going to fade it out anywhere, it's going to be that dope-ass sax solo. Dude, I was unaware. This is right up my alley. Oh, God, that friggin' just disco jam, and then just kick it in, and like, and then the female choir the behind them.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah, this is tasty.
It's a super banger. It's a super banger. It's like when I actually didn't find out until almost towards the end of round one that Lupin the Third was somehow not in here, and I just assumed it was because you didn't know what a banger it was. And so I'm like, well, we gotta at least work it in somewhere, thus play in game.
I'm gonna let you guys vote, and then I'm gonna give my take on each of these.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. Sure. Lupin the Third.
I'm gonna vote. Look, Steven Universe is great, but Lupin the Third is just another level. Chan, how about this? We each make the case for our song in like 20 seconds, and then Gina will give her take. Is that fair?
Sure.
Because me and you already know who we're going to vote for.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Chan, why don't you go first since your song went first?
Okay. Basically, Steven Universe is an encapsulation of the entire show, which is this marvelously inclusive, like loving, beautiful show that is silly and goofy and light, but then just like has such tender, deep moments, and it all gets compressed down into 22 seconds, which is, I mean, concision is, it's beautiful.
Okay.
That's right? Great. And I would say about Lupin the Third, Lupin the Third is over the top. You know, it comes from like, you know, the 1970s, I believe, late 60s, 70s is when Lupin the Third kind of became a thing in Japan. And so what you're seeing here in that theme song is this is a character that is larger than life. This is an over the top thing. This is why you have these kind of very dramatic vocals and the disco beat behind it, because it does kind of have its soul in the 1970s. So you know what you're about to see is a lot of bravado, a lot of bluster, and a lot of pizzazz.
All right. I'm going to be real unpopular here and say of all the songs that we've done, these two are my least favorite. I've heard Steven Universe before, and I like the show. I don't like the theme song. It's too weak and soft for me. It's too, the fact that like Steven, the character of Steven, can't actually sing, and the register is like pretty high for some weird reason I just don't like it. It grates on my nerves. Like, I think that the tune, if they like lowered it and like you went around the house like sort of humming it, like, okay, it's fine. But it's just not, it's not rocking at all.
Courtney, the American Girl sucks.
It's not rocking. it's, you know, it's sort of like, it does not rock at all. It's too soft and, you know, whatever the, I'm trying to think of a nice way to say.
I'm afraid of what you're about to say about my song.
It's too soft and pathetic like me. Is that what you're going to say?
No, it's Gina? It's sort of like what I would, you know, like if someone was making fun of something they thought sounded girly, that's what it sounds like to me. If some 80s movie villain said, "Oh, this song is too girly," I feel like this is what the song would be. It's weak in my opinion. And the characters can't sing it because it's in too high a register, which annoys me.
Oh my God.
Again, like the show, not a fan of the song. Lupin the Third, I enjoyed it when it started, and then it went on so long. Yep. And with
it is a long song.
With few changes. So like if they had condensed this into 30 seconds and had the saxophones come in and had the choir come in, which I agree, all of that is dope. The saxophones are dope. The choir is dope. But it got to a point where I zoned out because I was like, oh my God, this is the same thing over and over. What's happening? But if it was 30 seconds, I would say, oh, hands down, this, you know, like this is dope. I love the 70s style of it. It's just, why is it so long? It's like a show that they shouldn't have made. It's like the show Alias, when they shouldn't have made a fifth season of Alias.
I disagree with literally everything that has come out of your mouth.
You don't think it's too long? It's so long that Ray didn't even play the whole song.
Well, oh, to be fair, that was an extended, like, this is like an extended version of the song. On the actual TV show, I want to say it's like a minute or less.
To your
point right there, I couldn't find that version of it. Plus, I really like the 4-minute version.
Okay, well, that's vastly different, Ray. Because I was just thinking, if I was watching this and I was excited to watch a show, sitting there for 4 minutes and watching the theme song every week would drive me insane. But if it was a minute, that makes a huge difference. Yeah. Why'd you play that version?
Bill, that I think came from a movie, I want to say. And then there's like opening credits and like animations that kind of play over the front of it. But you know what? I played that version, Gina, because I love that version and there would be no other justification needed. I love it.
Okay. I mean, my answer is the same because of the fact that I would have loved Lupin if it had been 30 seconds or a minute, I've got to give it to Lupin.
Ray.
Steven Universe was short, but I did not enjoy it.
Ray, there are no winners here.
No, I really don't feel like
I told you I was gonna be unpopular.
At Gina Ippy on Twitter. what
look, here's the thing. Some friends of mine work on Steven Universe, and it is a great show. No shade on the show. I feel like I'm going to be hated for this. I just don't. The theme song is not my style. I like a more rockin' theme song.
It's fair. Well,
also, the last scene of season of Alias was not the best, but it definitely was necessary. So there.
Wow.
In your face.
Look, I've rewatched Alias 3 times. How many times have you rewatched it, Chan?
Don't bring your weird obsessive compulsiveness into this. That's not what this is about.
I guarantee Aliens. You I've seen all of Alias more recently than you have.
Well, that's our theme song throwdown for this week, and we're going to end it here while we're still friends.
I'm just saying, put either of those up against something like Life is Like a Hurricane Here in Duckburg, and they're blown out of the water.
Outrageous. Absolutely outrageous. But I'm happy Lupin advances, but I'll be honest, Jan, I'm going to give it up to you. That Steven Universe song is dope. I don't believe what Gina says even
Bring
a little
your
bit.
30-second Lupin version next time, Ray.
I'm going to
find a 30-second.
I'm going to listen to a 12-minute version of Lupin the Third because that was hell and dope.
Okay, guys, that's our theme song throwdown for the day. Wasn't it a good one? Who even knows what it was? We just did it, and I don't even know which one we just did. Isn't that crazy how podcasts work? Anyway, you can hit us up. Guys, anything you want to plug before we get on out of here, I should say?
Yes, I do, actually.
What?
This is a very important message that I would like to convey to the people of America.
Hello, thank you for calling the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration's National Helpline for information on treatment and recovery support services. For English, press 1. Para Español, presione 2.
That was, and at the end of the episode, there was an 800 number that you could call from this 1991 or 92 episode of G.I. Joe. Chan called it.
Wait.
Gina called it too.
I called it first and said, did anyone else call this? I was fully expecting it to be disconnected, by the way. That's a long period of time. And
why didn't you
be someone's number?
You said that, and I thought it was going to be something cool, like, thanks for calling the G.I. Joe hotline. We're gonna stop drugs together, kids.
No.
It's like a totally boring-ass, like, actual hotline.
It's not impressive to you that this hotline is still working?
No. The least you can...
How long do you think normal hotlines are up for?
We do a podcast. If you say like, oh my goodness, there's a telephone number. You told me that I should call this number. So I was like, okay, I'm going to do it on air. It's going to be fun. that was the most boring thing we've ever done.
Okay, okay.
We've been doing the show for 5 years.
I will redeem myself. This will definitely appeal to our audience. I was going to bring it up myself, but Chan should be the one that brings it up. I don't know if you guys have seen it, but for those of you familiar with American Girl dolls, which they you know, I guess all these dolls are sort of historical figures. They'll be like, oh, look at this one. She's in 1776. Her best friend's name is Fanny, and she has a horse that's blind in one eye. The latest doll that they have from the deep, dark depths of history is called Courtney 1986. And me, Haley Mancini, and Leslie Cena have been watching the commercial nonstop every day for about 2 days now. And it is great. And it comes with a real working arcade cabinet. And there's a whole song, and she does the robot in the commercial. It's a very weird commercial.
I know what commercial's going in the commercial break for this episode. Audience would have already listened to.
We really, and the thing is, I watched it expecting to hate it, but now I need it. Haley told her boyfriend to propose to her with a Courtney 1986 doll. I'm writing in Courtney 1986 for president because who cares at this point?
Perfect. Gina, dear God.
That's the right answer. I'm glad to hear it.
I am too scarred to even joke about that anymore.
Right. Gina, how much more can 2020 beat on you? Like, have you just come out the other side and have just gone full Trump wagon? Is
no,
that what
I'm
we...
just slowly slipping back into 1986 as a wee baby.
And wee Baron.
That's going to be who I am from now on. And you'll have to stop by my house three times a day to change my diaper while I'm playing with Courtney 1986.
She's putting on Joker.
Who's that blocking
right now?
Voters at the polling station? Oh, it's Trump wagon, Gina Ippolito.
Courtney.
What is happening?
1986. She can't be president. She's a doll.
Okay, guys. Well, I'm gonna go ahead and give us some links because I'm done here. So you can hit us up on, of course, Facebook.com/ Knowing Is Half the Podcast. You can hit up our Patreon, as our one wonderful reviewer said to do so. And give us 5-star reviews, but also Patreon.com/ Knowing Is Half the Podcast. For $5 a month, you can get 400 or 500, whatever number it is, shows, episodes of the show. We've done a lot over 5 years, guys. It's kind of crazy how that works out.
We haven't made it quite to 500, but they're definitely more than 400, which is, that's a lot. That's a lot.
That's a lot. That's a lot. Fantastic.
The good thing is that we're really close to getting our master's degrees, right? Because of all the hours we put in, we get a master's degree at the end of this.
Yes. Yes, indeed. That is what we could have been doing with our time instead of what we did. That's one more.
Wow, you put it like that, I get really depressed.
Did not need.
But we get a master's degree in 80s cartoons. That will get us
that's true.
A larger salary on our next jobs.
It is definitely as practical as the degree in theater and English that I did get. So
what I love about this is Gina's the only one of the three of us who actually was able to like use this show to help her at the job that she's in.
Oh yeah, several times.
Several times being affiliated with this show has helped you in your career.
Yeah.
Not mere chat.
I don't understand what I did wrong with my life.
It's a big selling point when I have meetings to sell shows.
It's true. I mean, I'm not even lying when I say that.
No, I know that.
That's the absurd part.
That's what makes it so much more hurtful.
speaking of, the Unicorn season one is about to be on Netflix on October 1st. If anyone wants to just, you know, put that on and play it on a loop so that I can get 2 bits on every 150 days, Netflix shows it because them's the deals.
Dang.
Run it in your house checks. So that eventually I can buy a popsicle.
Nice. See? We're doing good here on the show. Oh, my goodness. Okay. So you can hit us up. You can hit up at G.I. Joe Podcast on Twitter or at Prez Serpentor with a Z. Serpentor, I'm sure, has got a lot to say. He might have to do some tweeting later today. Oh, the world is terrible. Okay, everybody. You can hit me up individually. I am at Almighty Ray.
At 999 RPMs.
I'm at Gina Ippy.
And that is our show, Greatest Evil Part 1. We're going to do some, I think, a Patreon suggestion next week and come back with Part 2 in a couple of weeks. Unless you listen to this 2 years from when we recorded it, then you can listen to whatever the heck order you want to. It's your world. Live in it. Jerks.
Live in the blasted hellscape that's around a few years from now.
Oh, God bless America.
But to hold on tight, you got to do the fighting with all of your might. You got to keep the target straight ahead in your sight.
You got it ready to go?
What?
I did it to you for once.
He did it to you. You pulled a Chan on Jan.
Oh, wow. That's interesting.
I pulled a Chan on Jan. Put that at the end of the episode.
Hello, dear listeners. Do you enjoy playing video games with your best friends? Then I have the pod for you. I'm Philip, host of the Gaming Together, a cooperative podcast. Each week, my co-host Nave and I break down a cooperative experience in gaming, and we are always looking for new co-op partners to join us. So come play with us on the Gaming Together podcast.
So I'm standing over this toilet taking a piss, and I'm playing my Pokemon, and I dropped it in the toilet. I remember the Game Boy just tumbling into water. And I remember screaming for my mom, trying to get this Game Boy.
Wait, how old are you?
And she yelled at me. And
oh,
I was
my
just,
God.
Like, traumatized. I was like, no, my Pokemon.
That's Gaming Together, a cooperative podcast. Come on down, co-op partners.